Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Long time, 94, 2012, 18 years, radio. I started to get the feeling that Obama had a lucky star over his head. He certainly does. How could an unknown man of unknown origins become president of the United States without any scrutiny, I asked myself. I said, he must have a lucky star. And I said, look at what the Republicans are doing to themselves. He's going to win again. I said, something is so wrong with this country when I see an unknown creep like Santorum still in the race. It's amazing to me. Perhaps the least qualified Republican in history is still running against Romney. Now, Romney, as you well know, is a middle-of-the-road, check-pants, country club Republican, but certainly a better choice than Obama for the reasons we've discussed. But just when I woke up this morning and I said it looks like it's a lock sure for Obama to get reelected because of what the Republicans are doing to themselves, lo and behold, the following happens. Obama's overseas. He's caught on tape telling the outgoing Prime Minister of Russia, Medvedev, that after he is reelected, he says, after my election, I will have more flexibility. And Medvedev of Russia says, whispering, thinking the mic was closed, I understand. I will transmit this information to Vladimir Putin, and I stand with you. Now, how does Obama know he's going to be reelected? Is it because the power structure has already told him that? Is it because a fix is in? Is it because Romney's going to take a fall? Well, let's run the tape backwards. Here's Obama telling Medvedev to tell Putin that he's going to get reelected, and after which he'll stab his allies in the back. Listen.
This is my last election day for you.
Yeah,
after my election, I have more flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
Now, did you hear any of the sound? It's very hard to hear. So let's start with clip one, which I asked for, and then clip two. Go now.
Today, at the end of a meeting with Russia's outgoing president, Dmitry Medvedev, President Obama was overheard giving Medvedev a very candid political assessment of his ability to deal with missile defense and other issues, saying that it was important for the incoming president.
Yeah, and
after my election, I have more flexibility.
And this, I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
All right, so the president is caught with a hot mic. Now, what's interesting to me is someone did this to him. Somebody on the inside fears what's coming in this country and did this on purpose. This did not happen by accident. Somebody at last inside the Obama administration has done the right thing and let us hear what this man really is. Aside from the nice guy who eats ribs, the nice guy who has a nice family, the nice guy is not such a nice guy. He seems to be, if not, let us say, let's put it in a mild sense to start with. Let us say he's the new Chamberlain. You know, old Chamberlain, remember him? I said this in 2012, March 26, 2000. Excuse me, I said this back in 2010. I said Obama is the new Chamberlain. What did I say in 2010? Well, I'll read it to you later. He's the new Chamberlain at the very least. He may be much worse, but let's not go there right now. And I'm going to lead right into something that's very important to me, and I hope it's important to you. Yes, next week, my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, comes out. And on the cover, it states the following. It says this: welcome to the newly created Union of Socialist States of America, a land where our worst enemies are praised, but our allies are stiffed. That's what I said Obama is doing to us. Now, I ask you, how does Obama know he's going to get reelected? His poll numbers have never been lower. How is this possible? How does he understand this? So, again, I go back to the question. How does he know he's going to be reelected? Today, in front of a microphone that Obama thought was off, Obama betrayed both Europe and the United States. Speaking off the record, or so he thought, to outgoing PM Medvedev of Russia, he begged for more space. What a hippie phrase that is, isn't it? I need more space. You didn't think that I was right when I said that we have a bunch of aging hippies running this country, did you? But he wants space. What does he think? It's an S training session? But he wants more space on the issue of defending our allies. In other words, he wants the right to stab Poland and Czechoslovakia in the back again. Then Obama goes on to say this would be his last election and that after he wins again, he would have more flexibility. Now, the first thing this means is that Obama is betraying both Europe and the United States. What he means is that after he's reelected, he'll be free to pull the plug on the planned missile defense shield in Eastern Europe, stabbing in the back nations that were only until recently under the yoke of the Soviet Union. And make no mistake about it, this is also a betrayal of the United States of America and all of our strategic aims. For this is the same president who was making massive cutbacks to our military and to our nuclear defenses. But what is even more disturbing to me is that Obama, in what he thought was a private moment, seems to take his reelection for granted. Why does Obama do this at a time when his polls are lower than they've ever been, when gas prices are higher than they've ever been? Because the Republicans are weaker than they've ever been. This statement from Obama makes it clearer to me than it's ever been. The Republicans are taking a dive. Why else would Rick Santorum, one of the least qualified candidates in American history, still be allowed in the race at this point? Why would Newt Gingrich, who doesn't even have a remote chance of winning the nomination, continue to undermine Romney? And why would Romney present such moderation in the defense of liberty? Because the fix may be in. Because the Republicans may have betrayed themselves and betrayed conservatives, just as John McCain took a dive in 08. It looks to me like Romney is preparing to take a dive in 2012. The puppeteers behind the scenes have decided that just as there were 8 years of Bush, there will be 8 years of the Democrats fleecing the taxpayer. The Republicans may know this. Obama may know this. But I'm the only one who seems to have said it before everybody else. I pray to God I am wrong. And now I want to go back to the main point. And that is, in Trickle-Down Tyranny, the one book that you need in order to show your neighbors, to show your friends, to take to a PTA meeting, you may be able to change the course of history. Look at how prescient I was. I said our worst enemies are praised, but our allies are stiffed. The military is used as a pawn. Poverty is rewarded. Success is punished. Our borders have descended into chaos, while corporations and cronies are making off with all the wealth. You agree with any of that? Do you agree with any of what I just said? Well, Trickle-Down Tyranny is the one book you need to stop this emerging dictatorship before we lose all of our constitutional God-given rights. Now, I'm going to go on to another story that I've not yet touched on because I didn't know the facts. And that is the shooting of the young man Trayvon Martin, which has been demagogued by the likes of Al Sharpton, the race hater, the race monger, and not to be believed. They resuscitated him from somewhere. Jesse Jackson went out trying to see if he could cash in on this, in my opinion. Now the victim's side has been heard. The victim's side. There's the victim is dead. The other man's side. Because if Zimmerman's been turned into a victim already by Al Sharpton, they want to lynch him. The new Black Panthers have put out a wanted a dead or alive poster. The police report says Zimmerman says Trayvon decked him with one blow, then began hammering his head. And there's a witness. With a single punch, Trayvon Martin decked the neighborhood watch volunteer who eventually shot and killed the unarmed 17-year-old. Then Trayvon climbed on top of George Zimmerman and slammed his head into the sidewalk, leaving him bloody and battered. Law enforcement authorities have revealed to the Orlando Sentinel. That is the account Zimmerman gave police, and much of it has been corroborated by witnesses, authorities say. There have been reports that a witness saw that initial punch that Zimmerman told police about. The fact of the matter is there's much more to this story. I did not touch on this story because the idea of an unarmed black teenager being hunted down and shot by a neighborhood watch commander was a disgusting, horrible idea. Horrible. But right now, it seems that Al Sharpton wants a lynch mob.
It seems that the new Black Panthers will not be happy unless Zimmerman is lynched. We are now descending into chaos at the hands of these out-of-state agitators. So before you hang a man, make sure you know all of the details. This is a disgrace that the media let this go on. You hear what I just said? It is a disgrace that the media did this to this kid Zimmerman. Yes, it's a horrible thing that this man, Trayvon Martin, is dead. It's also horrible that Zimmerman has been accused of things he may not have done. I want to talk about this story. Have you heard the news story? Have you read the news story? Has it made it to your newspaper yet? Because there are two versions to the events. In his version of events, Zimmerman turned around and was walking back to his SUV when Trayvon approached him from behind. The two exchanged words, Trayvon saying, "You got a problem?" Zimmerman said no, and then Trayvon punched him in the nose, sending him to the ground, and began pounding his head against the pavement. Zimmerman said he pulled out a gun and shot him in self-defense. But so-called civil rights leaders have demanded Zimmerman's arrest, calling Trayvon a victim of racial profiling and suggesting Zimmerman is a vigilante. But there's much more to the story. Much more to the story, and that's why we have a nation of laws with trials. And until you hang somebody, as Al Sharpton apparently wants to do and the new Black Panthers apparently want to do, why don't you give this guy who's accused of murder a fair trial? Now let's go back to the bigger story, which is the story of the newly created Union of Socialist States of America, a land where poverty is rewarded, success is punished, our worst enemies are praised, and our allies are stiffed. And if you missed it, Obama was caught on tape virtually and figuratively giving himself away for the traitor he appears to be. Agree with me or disagree? You can call 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Big news today that should be saved in your memory until Election Day is Obama was caught on tape. He thought the microphone was closed, but somebody left it open, telling Medvedev that once he is reelected, he'll be able to deal with missile defense and other issues with a lot more flexibility. Now, how does he know he's going to be reelected? He didn't say, should I be reelected? He didn't say, I hope when I'm reelected. He said, when I am reelected. This is the president of the United States. All of you liberals know he's a very bright man. He came from nowhere to become president. How does he know he's going to be reelected? Moreover, why is he stabbing Poland and Czechoslovakia in the back along the lines of another famous pacifist who got it all backwards by the name of Neville Chamberlain? Back in 2010, Michael Savage called Obama the new Chamberlain. And I wrote this. I said, Obama is the new Chamberlain. He made the Senate vote to cut our nukes by 30% in 2010. Now he's asking for deeper cuts in 2012. Obama dismantled the car industry, dismantled the best healthcare system in the world, and now he's dismantling our military by asking for another insane nuclear treaty with Russia when America has clearly signaled that it doesn't want that. Obama wants to destroy our nukes just when Iran and North Korea are building up theirs. Obama claims this treaty will coax Iran into discontinuing its nuke program. I wrote, that's crazy. And what about Russia? I wrote, anyone who thinks they'll keep their word is crazy. Russia has a history of reneging on nuke agreements. It's impossible to verify how many they've destroyed. And they've already said that they can pull out of the agreement. I go on. I said, Obama has gone around the world bowing to world leaders, signing away the power of the United States of America without getting anything in return, and weakening what was once the greatest power in the world. The leaders of Great Britain in the 1920s and 30s did the same thing. They bowed to Hitler and Mussolini. They forced through treaties such as the Munich Agreement, signed by British PM Neville Chamberlain. In 1930, you may not know this, England agreed to a five-year halt on capital ship construction, tighter controls on British submarine warfare, and limits on aircraft carriers. But throughout the 1930s, Germany was building up a huge navy. Chamberlain gave Nazi Germany more and more power, but he cut back on England's military expenditures so that by the time Hitler was ready to strike, England was so anemic it was barely able to survive the Nazi onslaught. Obama is the Chamberlain of today. Now, I can read on, but I don't have to. I don't have to read on. Anyone who knows history knows that Obama is dismantling the United States of America piece by piece. You know, these are strange times, both politically and radio-wise. There's a very strange chill running across the radio landscape. Because of what's happening to Rush, everyone is afraid to say one word about Obama for fear that they will be thrown off the air by nervous advertisers, nervous stations. And I wake up every day and say, well, how far can I go in saying what I know to be true? Should I check myself now? Should I edit myself right now? Should I hold back on what Obama is doing? The answer is, how can I? What is the point of having a free press and a free voice on commercial radio if you have to check yourself with when the truth is staring you in the face? It's one thing to curse someone, to insult somebody. That's one thing. But I'm not making this up. Here you have the President of the United States caught off guard. Somebody opened that microphone because they're terrified of what he's going to do. My guess is it was someone inside the Democrat machine did this because they want us to know what Obama really is behind the smiley face. Behind that smiley face is a very treacherous man. Remember what Cicero wrote about the enemy within. He walks like you, he talks like you, he speaks in your tones, but he's more frightening than a burglar. He said even that a murderer is less to be feared than a traitor within our walls. And so, therefore, I have to ask the question, which doesn't even need to be asked. And that is, you want me to ask you the question? Do you think that Obama has signaled that he knows he's going to be reelected? How does Obama know he's going to be reelected? How in the world does he know this? How does he know this? I'd like to ask this question on The Savage Nation. And the minute I come back, you're going to have a chance to sound off and be heard by more people in that one phone call than you've ever met or will meet for the rest of your lives. It's an awesome statement. Many of you used to write letters to the editor, but no one does that anymore. Well, guess what? Talk radio is the one place you can get a verbal letter to the editor to millions of people. Millions of people will hear you. You can't do that on cable television, can you? But you can do that right here on talk radio, the last vestige of the First Amendment.
Savage.
So I believe that Obama was born with a lucky star over his head. I mean, to have the lowest poll numbers in history and to have such incompetence and such a lackluster string of opponents on the other side, with a campaign that has been dragging on, it seems, forever, having millions of people just tune out and discuss, saying, I can't stand any of them. They're all the same. Who cares who wins? That's what the Republicans have achieved. And so you catch him on the open mic. He thinks it's closed, and he says, when I'm reelected. So you could say, well, maybe you're making too much of it. It doesn't mean he's a traitor. It doesn't mean he's dreaming of the socialist states of America. It doesn't mean he's dreaming of stabbing Czechoslovakia and Poland in the back. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that he figures he's going to win, and he's telling his friends in Russia to cool it for a while he gets more, while he has more space, like a 1970s Est graduate. He needs more space, does he? How does he know he's going to win? It's really a very simple question. And then that horrible case. Well, let's start with the top of the story. We all agree that this dead child, Trayvon Martin, should be alive. We all agree on that. We all agree that he shouldn't be dead. We all agree he was unarmed and that Zimmerman was armed. We all agree with that. But we don't know the rest of the story. But we do know also that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are exploiting the death of this young man. And in fact, the President of the United States should stop them and rein them in. That would take leadership. Now, am I the only one saying that Sharpton and Jackson are exploiting the Trayvon Martin tragedy? No. The former NAACP leader accuses Sharpton and Jackson of exploiting Trayvon Martin. That's right. You heard me. Former NAACP leader C.L. Bryan is accusing Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton of exploiting the Trayvon Martin tragedy to racially divide this country. The Reverend C.L. Bryant, apparently a real reverend as opposed to one who got it out of a Cracker Jack box somewhere in the depths of Brooklyn, the real Reverend C.L. Bryant said his family should be outraged at the fact that they're using this child as the bait to inflame racial passions. How come you didn't see that one? How come that didn't make it to the newspapers that are showing poor Trayvon Martin in a middle school jersey as opposed to what he looked at the time of his terrible, terrible tragedy? How is that possible that the media has already tried to fan the flames of a race war in this country? Why, you're shocked by it? You're shocked that the, what's the point of me calling them names? You know who they are. You despise the media. I get sick. I can't even watch them anymore. They're all bad. Only one is worse than the other. They've learned nothing from history, and they like to see the cities burn, baby, burn. They like nothing better than America to burn in August. Satellite trucks and get big ratings. They like nothing better than to see cities burn. They're a threat to the survival of this country. And so therefore, before the trial, we see Sharpton and Jackson trying to stir up hatred. I have said before that this activism by this street thug, Al Sharpton, should cause him to be fired by MSNBC. But as you well know, Jeffrey Immelt has no conscience. As you well know, Jeffrey Immelt, who runs General Electric, which owns MSNBC, that they want spread and they want rent-the-mobs out there to keep people in line. That's my opinion. It's frightening to see this kind of smear going on. It's just frightening. Mitt Romney was asked today about Obama telling Russian president about having more flexibility after the election. The slimy worm, Wolf Blitzer, then tried to set him up about a movie he took his grandchildren to. The slimy worm, Blitzer, doesn't know any bottom. I don't know where to begin in this, but I watched that slimy worm. You know, of all of them, I have like a rogues list of people that make me the sickest. Andrea Mitchell would be the twin gargoyle to Wolf Blitzer, of two of the most vile people in the history of the media. Andrea Mitchell and her husband, Alan Greenspan, should be indicted and tried for what they did to this country during the last administration. Remember Alan Greenspan? Remember the kindly old Alan Greenspan, the head of the Federal Reserve? How come Alan Greenspan has never been indicted for what he did while the head of the Reserve? And then he had his wife in the media apologizing and covering for him. How does she still have a job on MSNBC? She goes to Cuba over the weekend, Andrea Mitchell. I couldn't believe this one. And I see her putting out a PR piece on how wonderful Cuba is and how evil America is. She interviews a student in Cuba who says that Cuba is nothing like what she thought it was, that people are beautiful there. Then Andrea Mitchell, Alan Greenspan's wife, says how important it is that the Cuban government work with the Catholic Church to offset the effects of the United States embargo, taking the side of the Castro brothers. How do these people get away with it? In my time, Andrea Mitchell would have been arrested on returning to the United States of America. But that's when we had an America. That's when we had real people running this country who we knew we could count on. Of course there was corruption. Of course there was evil. But there was a line in the sand, and that line in the sand was national security. Under Obama, there is no line in the sand. There's no goalpost. He took down the goalpost. He's playing for the other side, and so is everyone at MSNBC. They're playing for the other side. But how does Obama know he's going to win is the question. New York, John, go ahead. Give us your opinion. You're on the Savage Nation.
Well, let me tell you one thing quick. When I go to vote, I take my Savage Nation hat and one of your books, and I hold it like a Bible when I walk in to pull the lever.
Hold on. You know, you're not allowed to. I think that they could tell you can't take a book in.
I don't care. I do it anyway. But anyway, he knows he's going to win because he sees the Republicans outdoing themselves on a daily basis, and he's laughing. He knows the people that count the votes are going to be in his favor, and he's going to have the illegal aliens in his favor as well.
Wow. Well, unfortunately, I cannot disagree with one thing that you just said. That's the unfortunate reality, John. That's the unfortunate reality. I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. Today is the kickoff day. We're 1 week out from a favor I'm asking you, and it's for you to go to the bookstore next Tuesday. My birthday is Saturday. Saturday night is a big birthday of mine, and it's a freaky birthday for me. I don't want to go into it, but, you know, as you get older, birthdays start to have more meaning. I don't even like them. It's like weird. But you start, you know, adding it up and this and that and how many more of this you're going to have. So Saturday's a birthday. then Monday, Tuesday is the day the book comes out. I need you to do for this book something that you did for Trickle Up Poverty. I need you to go into the bookstore. I need you to flood the bookstores. I need you to demand the book and buy it, because it will be up front. Thank God Harper Publishers is a powerhouse, and they bought up front placement. But I want you to go in and send the message, because if we get on the lists, and if it says Trickle Up Poverty, number one, two, or three, by Michael Savage, that's going to Trickle Down Tyranny, excuse me, by Michael Savage on the lists, all of the book lists. That sends a powerful message across the media landscape. Of course O'Reilly will continue his embargo of Savage. Of course the wall banger will not have me on. Of course Scarface won't let me near her. I understand that. But it doesn't matter. I need you to do that. Okay, you're the most powerful force in American politics. And you know what really freaks me out? I must tell you this. Every time I turn the television on, I hear about the Hispanic caucus. I hear about this caucus. I hear about that caucus. This country is about 67% Caucasian. Where in the world are the politicians who speak to the vast majority of Americans who are of European-American to stab the European-American people in the back like this? I can't stomach it anymore. If I see one more spineless politician whining about the Hispanic this and the Hispanic that, why are they catering to them? Why does Romney embarrass himself by going before and genuflecting before that worm of worms, Wolf Blitzer? Why does he spit in your face? Why does he spit in your face? Why does Romney say to you, go to hell, I don't care if you vote for me or not, I don't need you? What, is he crazy? There's only one conclusion. Either the man is out of touch with reality, or his advisors are stabbing him in the back, or, and this is the worst possibility, the worst, the fix is in. The fix is in. It's the 1919 World Series again. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Let's take the next caller on the Savage Nation. Las Vegas, Mark, go ahead. You're up.
Thank you, Michael. I'm just very disappointed. Again, we are seeing inside information used by these individuals all the way up to the President of the United States, who now is going to be using it as a treason attack with the Russians. I am just so surprised, so shocked, that only after my elections will I dictate as to how I'm going to handle any nuclear information behind this microphone that was cracked is just mind.
Well, Mark, you sound like a very intelligent man who's very keen to what's going on. Do you think somebody in the Obama administration opened that mic in order to signal to us that even they understand how dangerous he is?
Mike, I'm in the broadcast industry. Yes. Somebody is giving out the information, thank God.
I believe somebody inside the Obama machine has finally cracked because they're terrified of this man. That's my only suspicion. I mean, excuse me. That's the only reason I can think of. These things don't happen by themselves.
They don't.
Never. They never happen by themselves. Somebody did this to Obama because they're terrified of what he's going to do to this country, Mark. Now I'm going to send you Trickle Down Tyranny, and I'm going to read you one paragraph. Everyone listen carefully. Chapter 8. Tell me if you disagree with one word of this paragraph. Chapter 8, tyranny of treating our friends like enemies and our enemies like friends. Now, who is prescient, me or me? In the 1950s, when I was growing up, they were called eggheads. Today, they're called nerds. We're all familiar with them. They've got an excess of IQ and a shortage of testosterone. They spend most of their lives inside the academic incubator with no real-world experience. They've never met a payroll or responded to anything more urgent than a fire drill, and they've never dealt with anyone who challenged their leftist politics. After they graduate, they shuffle from campus to Washington and back. There are cabinet secretaries, ambassadors, and presidential advisors. They bring along a globalist perspective that is an absolute danger to the United States' position of economic and military supremacy in the world. Beatle John Lennon called them college pudding. It's these people who advise Obama on how to conduct this foreign policy. In the previous chapter, I told you about how they decided which wars we would fight and which ones we would ignore based on the responsibility to protect doctrine. Now I'm going to tell you about how they decide which dictators to support and which to oust. These Ivy Leaguers, especially President Obama, have trouble telling our friends from our enemies. Well, did you like that line? They have trouble telling our friends from our enemies. Does that apply today, given that what Obama was heard saying? They tend to get it all backwards. More trickle-down tyranny. They ignore or attack our old friends and give aid and comfort to our former enemies and eventually hope to get them to switch places. I can go on. There's some great lines in here. It starts with the fact that America is a rudderless, leaderless nation. Weak, inexperienced leaders like Barack Obama are easy prey for international power brokers like Soros. I explained in Trickle Up Poverty how Soros was instrumental in bringing about Obama's election by working to cause the financial meltdown that enabled Obama to win. Obama had been behind in all the polls up to the time of the September 08 financial crash, but he never trailed after it. Soros' influence didn't stop with getting a malleable schoolboy elected president. It continued to significantly affect the president's foreign policy, from the fact that we now treat our friends like enemies and our enemies like friends, right down to how the administration conducted the war in Libya. It means that everything is upside down and backwards in Obama's foreign policy, just like George Soros wants it to be. Treat your sworn enemies like friends and your longtime friends like enemies. It's the Ivy League way. You agree with those words? You can read them for yourself and tell your friends about them in Trickle Down Tyranny. It's your script to save America. I'll be back.
Savage.
There's something terribly wrong with that. It is alarming. It is troubling. The agreement that the president put in place with regards to nuclear weapons is one which I find very, very troubling already. The decision to withdraw our missile defense sites from Poland put us in greater jeopardy, in my view. The actions he's taken so far, which he says are to reset relations with Russia, have not worked out at all. Russia continues to support Syria, supports Iran, has fought us with the crippling sanctions we wanted to have the world put in place against Iran.
See, everything Romney said is correct, but he doesn't say it correctly. Let me put it to you that way. In other words, he speaks like a bureaucrat would speak about it, almost like an academician. Everything he said I agree with about Obama's statement to Medvedev. But it's the way he doesn't say it which explains his lack of traction with the voter in America. He can't say it this passionately. He's got to get some more rubber on the road. Mitt must understand that he can't play it that cool. He's got to get impassioned to win. Now, here's another story that you better keep your eye on. A firm tied to Harry Reid is trying to get a $4.9 billion federal loan for a train to Las Vegas. That's right. This insanity just came up today. A firm tied to Harry Reid's trying to get a $4.9 billion federal loan for a Vegas train. And wait, here's something else you better watch out for. Some people have predicted this was coming. 2 million Arabs are going to march on Jerusalem this Friday. And if this is not biblical, I'd like to know what is. Did you hear what I just said? We are entering biblical days. 2 million Arab and international leftist agitators will march towards the borders of Israel and take part in activities this Friday. Did you hear what I just said to you? I predicted this nightmare could happen. So-called volunteers from 80 countries, Jew haters, all of them, 80 countries, leftist fanatics, are stirring up the Arab masses to march on Israel this Friday. What will they do after the march? Liberate it, wrote commentator Mohammed Malkawi. Other talkbackers ask about solidarity activities in Sudan or Iraq. That is happening this Friday. 700 institutions from 64 states are involved on the swarm on Jerusalem this Friday. This is very much almost a biblical prediction. I don't know how this ends well. Israel cannot defend itself against 2 million unarmed civilians swarming onto their land. Can they? What can Israel do? Put tanks on the border and fire shells into crowds? They can't do that. So tell me how this ends. I don't know how this ends. Because after all, I'm only a talk show host who was banned in Britain and banned from Fox News. And the sun stood still and the moon stayed until the nation had avenged themselves of their enemies. Joshua 10, chapter 13. And the sun stood still and the moon stayed until the nation had avenged themselves of their enemies. You want to read something tonight? Read about Joshua from the Bible if you're a biblically oriented person. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear not, neither be thou dismayed. Take all the people of war with thee, and arise, go up to Ai. All the people of war. So if you want to understand what's going on in the world, what's going on in the world now is what's gone on in the world from the beginning of man's history, and what goes on beneath the sea and in the air. Every creature is at war with every other creature from the beginning of time until the end of days. Life is a constant struggle. It goes on inside your own body. Microbes fighting your immune system fighting microbes, nation fighting nation, one man fighting another man. All of reality that you live in, everything about it is warfare. It's just on different levels, different scales, and so we can't see it, but this is what's going on. 1-800-449-8255, Trickle Down Tyranny, the one book you will need to possibly save America. When I wrote this, I didn't know how prescient I would be, where I said our worst enemies are praised and our allies stiffed. Is he not treating our enemies like friends and our friends like enemies? Can anyone argue with that? Tell me, who could argue with that? 1-800-449-8255, The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Today, at the end of a meeting with Russia's outgoing president, Dmitry Medvedev, President Obama was overheard giving Medvedev a very candid political assessment of his ability to deal with missile defense and other issues, saying that it was important for the incoming president, Putin, to give him some space.
This is my last space for you.
Yeah, and
after my election, I have more flexibility.
Yeah. And this, I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
This is my last election. After my election, I have more flexibility. President Medvedev says, I understand. I will transmit this information to Vladimir, and I stand with you. Now, these are loaded words. This is not an ordinary Joe. This is the president. There's another aspect to this that has not been touched upon by anyone in the media, so far as I know, which is how Obama touched Medvedev's hand. If you watch the video of him leaning forward, there's something creepy about that very light touch with the hand, something along the lines of a New York clothing salesman in the 1950s trying to sell you on a sharkskin suit. Or is there something more in that touch? There's something odd about it. It's a little familiar for a president of the United States to be engaging in. Go to michaelsavage.com and see the ABC clip. It's astounding. I've never seen anything quite like this. And also, look at Obama's face. Look at the supplication. Look at the fear in his eyes as he talks to Medvedev, and tell me who you think is the alpha male in that particular interchange. Is it Obama or President Medvedev of Russia? Who's the alpha male? And so, therefore, again, our worst enemies are praised, but our allies stiffed. That's what I warned you when I said to you that you must crush Obama's dream of the socialist states of America by buying trickle-down tyranny. I'm asking you to look into this. And now I want to go to something else, which is the flip side of the coin. Why is Obama so sure he's going to get reelected? Partly in my worst nightmare, because the Republicans have thrown the election. And I've said this before. I saw McCain do it in the last election. He was running ahead. Obama was nowhere. No one knew him. No one liked him. And yet McCain threw the election. That's what it looked like to most people who were studying this. He refused to take him on. He refused to use lines that I was giving him that were great lines that could have sunk Obama's presidency. Remember I said that in the last debate? I said, here you go, McCain. I don't like your politics, but I'd rather have you than Obama in tonight's debate, the last debate. All you got to do is smile at the senator and say, now, Senator, we've heard all of these ideas before. There's nothing new about them. We know them to be trickle-up poverty. That would have been the end of it. McCain could have won. But the advisors to McCain are the same as the advisors to Romney. The fix was in. And I'm going to play something for you right now from one of the great movies of all time, On the Waterfront, in clip 8.
This ain't your night. My night. I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
It sounds like McCain right now, doesn't it? And now... No, really, it's shocking how art predicts life in some cases. You know that McCain is seen like basically a washed-up fighter, a loser. And there's another movie that comes to mind, since I'm a movie lover, when the movies were great. Even today, some of the movies are great. The Harder They Fall, 1955, Humphrey Bogart, 18 seconds, play clip 9.
10th-rate fighter. You're what they call a bum.
I know, bum. I train hard and I fight hard. I do not know my own strength.
You believe all those lies I write about you. Nick Benko paid me to make up those fairy tales so people would think you couldn't be hurt.
No one can hurt Del Toro.
No way, any saloon fighter could wipe up the floor with you.
Now, I hate to say it, but the fact of the matter is, when you listen to Mitt Romney, he says all the right things, but there's no fire in the belly, there's no flame in the heart. He sounds very much like a middle-of-the-road academic, maybe a college president, maybe an interchangeable corporate president, you know, corporate CEO. He says the right things, but he doesn't say them with any passion. And that's why the American people are not warming up to Mitt Romney. There's no there there. Do you agree with me on this? Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. The other stories are also valid, and they're all up on my website. Here's a doozy that you're not going to believe. I saw it on a Drudge Report. You can't make these things up. You can't make them up. Obama asks the Islamist prime minister of Turkey how to raise children. President Barack Obama and Turkey's Islamist prime minister, Erdogan, have become such bosom buddies that Erdogan is giving Obama advice on raising his American daughters. The two met in South Korea on Sunday to discuss this, to discuss that. But they also talked about the president's two daughters, Obama said during a press conference, according to a White House statement. The bottom line is that we find ourselves in frequent agreement upon a wide range of issues, and because he has two daughters that are a little older than mine, they've turned out very well. So I'm always interested in his perspective on raising girls, Obama said. Well, how did Obama's role models for his daughters turn out? Let's look. One of Erdogan's two daughters, Sumi, is entering Turkish politics in her father's Islamist party. She wears Islamist clothing that obscure her hair and shape. In September 2010, the then 29-year-old met with her father and U2 singer Bono while wearing a scarf that covered her hair and throat, long sleeves that covered her forearms, and a baggy overcoat that hid her figure. In February 2011, the Islamist daughter Sumi attended a meeting at the UN headquarters in New York while wearing a tight headscarf that hid her hair and throat. She was accompanied by Erdogan's wife, Ermine, who wore a head-to-toe black cloak. Obama's daughters, 13-year-old Malia and 10-year-old Sasha, dressed far more liberally in typical American fashion. The First Lady, Michelle Obama, is a feminist and does not wear headscarves or throat scarves and often leaves her arms bare, I should add, comma, thus far, period. However, why in the world would Obama ask an Islamist his advice on child rearing? Did he make a mistake? Is it shocking to you that he would take child-rearing advice from a radical Islamist whose wife dresses in black cloaks or tight headscarves? Something is wrong with the entire picture, or are you finally getting the picture? Now, I want to go back again to that amazing tape that everyone's been talking about in the media all day today, caught on a hot mic. This is my last election. After my election, I have more flexibility. It's almost as he's saying, this is our last election. Many of you fear this, don't you? Well, I don't want to play into your fears. Maybe he's just saying he thinks he's going to win, and after he wins, he can engage in more liberal policies. You can look at it that way if you'd like, or you can look at it the other way if you like. It's a free country, isn't it? Are you still free to think the way you want to think? Well, I guess so, and you're free to say what you want to say thus far. So we have a super liberal president. Let's put it in a benign manner. Let's not go into tyranny. Let's not get carried away with any alarmist things about trickle-down tyranny. Let's not use the facts. Let's not confuse ourselves with the facts and what our eyes see. Obama reminds me of a story I heard when I was a very young man, and there's no vulgarity to it. A woman comes home and finds her husband in bed with another woman. The husband has such control over his wife that he looks at his wife and he says, who are you going to believe, me or what you see with your own eyes?
Savage.
Amazing, Timmy. You know, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it. It'll take 10 seconds. I stumbled upon something in Deuteronomy in the Old Testament, and it's a peaceful statement. You know, and I think that in times like this, it's important not to fall into the state of Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, who are trying to stir up a race war in this country. Not let yourself become a demagogue, even though you have passionate feelings based upon the facts before your eyes. And I want to read you something in Deuteronomy where it says, thou shalt not abhor an Egyptian, because thou wast a stranger in his land. Did you hear this? This is unbelievable. Thou shalt not abhor an Egyptian, because thou wast a stranger in his land. The children of the third generation that are born unto them may enter into the assembly of the Lord. Meaning that an Israelite could marry an Egyptian, and you shouldn't hate Egyptians. That's in Deuteronomy. How many of you know that this is in the Bible? That there are statements of such unity and peace in the Bible? When have you heard this? Where do you hear this? You certainly don't hear it from the media. I don't think you hear it in the pulpits. But let's go back to this enemy within. In the highest office of the land, or if you want to talk about the Trayvon Martin tragedy, now the shooter tells cops the teenager went for his gun. And there are witnesses saying they saw Zimmerman on the ground crying for help, and that the initial police report noted that Zimmerman was bleeding from the back of the head and nose, and that witnesses heard him screaming for help, and that the other guy, who unfortunately is dead, was beating him up, and that the other guy is not the little middle schooler that you see in all of the photos. Trayvon Martin, while he's only 17, and we all agree it's a terrible thing that he's dead and he shouldn't be, he was 6'3". He was an adult. He was an adult in size. Zimmerman is 5'9", weighed more than him. Now, of course, that hasn't stopped the Department of Injustice from already calling it a hate crime. Because the minute the Department of Justice investigates a case as a hate crime, it is a hate crime. The minute the rabble-rousers like Jackson and Sharpton arrive, it is a hate crime. And I don't want to talk about all the cases I've read of white people being brutalized by other races, whether they be Hispanics, 5 out-of-control gangs in this country. Are those hate crimes? Well, of course they're hate crimes, but you don't see the Department of Justice looking into them. You want me to cite the case in Knoxville, Tennessee of a few years ago that had me sick for 2 years, of a group of blacks who grabbed a white couple off the street and what they did to that girl and that boy and then set him on fire after raping her for 2 days? And that was not considered a hate crime? You want me to go into that story? Go ask the parents of those children, the white children who were brutalized like that and killed. So you have to understand that crime in America is very subjective. Crime in America is extremely subjective. When you live in a nation where a street thug like Al Sharpton then be rewarded with a job by Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, why, anything could happen, including the election of an unknown senator from Illinois. Let's go to the callers. And by the way, there's another big question. How did that mic be left open? Who left that microphone open for all the world to hear Obama acting like the Neville Chamberlain of our time? Who? It didn't happen by accident. A president travels with an entourage of hundreds of people. Secret Service, this aid, that aid, isn't it? So you're telling me that in Seoul, Korea, he didn't have his people checking the board, the Mackie board or whatever they're using like I use on radio? He had no one checking the ducking system, the kill switch? Well, do you think this happened by accident, or do you think there's a possibility that someone within the Obama team, somebody in the Obama team is afraid of this man and what he's doing to us behind the scenes, and that's why they leak this? But again, I ask you to please go and look at the original. It's a minute and a half of him leaning forward to Medvedev. And look at how the president supplicates in front of Medvedev. And tell me who the alpha male is. Is it Obama or Medvedev? Moreover, have you watched that strange touch of Obama's hand on Medvedev's arm? You can laugh about it and say it looks like a clothing salesman in New York in the 1960s. But there's something eerie and creepy about Obama reaching out and touching him like that. It's not only unpresidential, it's outright creepy. Something is wrong with this whole picture. And then Medvedev says, I will tell Vladimir about this. I will transmit this information to Vladimir, and I stand with you. What in the heck is this? Tom in Pennsylvania, what do you make of this? Is it as big a deal as I think it is, or is it nothing?
Well, you know, the thing that scares me more than what Obama said is the reaction of Dmitry when he said it. It was almost as if he already knew. It was common knowledge. And, you know.
Wait, when Medvedev says what?
Well, he didn't say anything. I mean, his reaction was a total agreement with him, as if Obama, you know, he says, when I am reelected, well, my reaction to somebody who says something, you know, is predicting the future is, well, how do you know you're going to be, reelected?
Do you know that the votes in America are counted by machines, some of which are not even in this country? Are you aware of that? That some of the voting is tabulated by computers that are owned by a foreign interest that we don't even know who they are? Do you know that?
I do, and it scares me. It scares the hell out of me.
I have the verification of what I just said in Trickle Down Tyranny. I have the absolute verification, because when that story came out this year, I really said this can't be going on. That the Republicans and the Democrats agreed to permit a foreign-owned entity to count the votes in America on computers outside America? So that's why I suspected that the fix is in and that Romney's a fall guy. There's every reason to believe he's a fall guy and a patsy. The way he's behaving, don't you think?
Absolutely.
And the way the RNC is letting this non-entity Santorum go on and on and on, doesn't that indicate that the fix is in? Something's wrong with the whole picture. How Romney spits in the face of conservatives and caters to liberals. He'll go on the Wolf Blitzer show and he won't come on this show. Forget about me. He won't go on any conservative show. He goes on Scarface. He goes on Wallbanger. He goes on Leprechaun, because they're all, the fix is in with all of them. They're all a member of the Murdoch Empire.
Savage. The money is going to come from the black community. We're already getting support from athletes and entertainers as we speak. By next week, we're looking forward to getting $1 million for the capture of George Zimmerman. We're going to force our government to do their job properly, and if they don't, we will. It is a very troubling time in the United States of America. We are in the era of so-called post-racial harmony with all people, but black people are being murdered all over America, and we get the same treatment time and time again.
Oh, there it is. The demagogues are at it again. They want to take a right. Do you think Zimmerman, do you think that Al Sharpton should be stopped from stirring up racial hatred? Do you think Al Sharpton should be prohibited from stirring up a crowd? I mean, there is a law in America against yelling fire in a crowded theater. And Al Sharpton's a distinguished member of the media. He is a man with no known credential for being a reverend, and yet the rats in the media refer to him with such reverence. Reverend Sharpton, they say. I have a real PhD from a great university. I've written 25 books, and I'm a, what do they call me? A jockey of some kind? Shock jock. I'm a shock jock. But it's the Reverend Al Sharpton, the uneducated street rat who stirred up one crowd after another and was rewarded by General Electric because that way they keep them out of the boardroom. You give them a job like that on the television, they don't bring a crowd outside GE headquarters to say, how come you're not paying your taxes? It's pretty cheap. Whatever you pay them is cheap. Pay them $1 million a year, you're not going to pay $1 billion a year. You understand how it works? You don't put two and two together. That's why there should have been a law prohibiting the interlocking corporate directorships I've been warning you about for years on the radio. Interlocking corporate directorships. Let's see. What does that mean? It means a guy sits on the board of GE. He owns media companies, newspapers, magazines, book companies. So he controls your mind. If he controls what you hear and he controls what you read and he controls what you see, then you get all the news that fits his agenda. You understand that? So it's pretty cheap to pay a guy like Sharpton $1 million a year because that way he doesn't have a rent-a-mob outside your office. He just goes to Florida and tries to make sure that it burns, baby, burns. So you want to talk about that? You want to talk about that story? It's a horrible story. We all agree on one thing. And what do we agree upon? What do we agree upon with that tragedy? We all agree on one thing. The young man who is dead should be alive. We agree on that. But before, you better understand that we live in a nation of laws. You understand this? Let's talk about it if you'd like to. Albany, Jack, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to say that the thing with Obama leaking that over the hot mic today and it getting back to us, I think there's no accident. There's okay. No way. There's such a firewall of liberal journalists from here to there that one person who thought they'd stick up for us and they were a plant inside Obama's administration, I don't think that doesn't cut it for me.
So let's take your point of view. After all, this was leaked by someone and posted on the most liberal of all ABC News, if you can define it as more liberal than the others. So why would he say he would have more flexibility when he's reelected? What are they trying to tell us?
I think they're trying just to pinch us and tease us a little bit so we go a little more crazy, and it all ties into every story on your program tonight, every topic you're covering. Why is there a race story in the news right now? Why is there this leaking out? Why is each story to me...
Well, you know what's interesting? The Trayvon Martin tragedy completely obliterated the execution of three Jewish children by a Muslim terrorist in France last week. Remember that story?
I certainly do.
The very same rats in the media who called it an act of a lone wolf, then a mass murderer, then a white supremacist, then a Nazi, swept it aside when it turned out it was exactly what I thought it was, which was a radical Islamist. They pushed that aside and jumped on this horrible tragedy. And they've made this around-the-clock news without us hearing the other side, including the police report, until this morning. Do you know that the prosecutor has said he can't win this case because the evidence does not support premeditated murder? The prosecutor in Orlando, who has taken the Trevor Martin case, has said he can't win this case. He's on record saying it's impossible to win.
Start.
All right, Jack, I can't hear you very well. Something went wrong there. I don't know what that is. New York, Mary, go ahead. Your opinion, please.
The last caller stole my thunder, but I'm psychic, so I know more. Obama's mic was on because Obama wanted it on. I don't know why, but he did.
Well, hold on now. Okay, so let's deal with this. Did you see, you haven't seen the tape, but you heard about it all day today, right?
The tape.
I'm sorry?
I saw the tape.
Okay, good. You saw the tape. What do you make, if you claim to be a psychic, of him leaning forward and touching Medvedev's arm in that most intimate way? What is that all about?
It was planned. It's an act. That's what I see. It was all planned. It's an act. I don't know why. I can't figure it out. Maybe tomorrow or tonight when I'm in the shower, it'll come to me why. But I don't know
why. He says, look, there he goes with the tap and Medvedev tapping him and Obama looking like he supplicated to Medvedev. It looks to me almost like the Manchurian candidate. That's what I see. Look at him. Look at him leaning forward. Look at him using his hands. Look at him almost asking for Medvedev's permission. And then saying thank you. And look at his face. You got to check the face of the president right after it's all done, where he looks and says, okay, good, good, good. They gave me permission to go on. It's frightening to watch this. You have to be a very skilled observer to see any of this. If you're just watching, if you're a type of person who just watches sports and Mad Men, you're not going to get any of this.
No, I observe people. I know what they're thinking.
Mary, now what do you, let's digress for a minute. What do you mean you're a psychic?
Well, I guess everybody's a psychic, but when I'm taking a shower, things come to me.
Yeah, me too. Like the soap, the water, the hot water, the cold water.
In the shower, things come to me. I don't know why it's the shower.
Well, you don't mean cockroaches come out of it. No, come on. What do you mean?
No, cockroaches.
Oh, come on. I'm just joking. So you say you get thoughts in the shower.
Thoughts in the shower, and they usually turn out right. When I was taking a shower.
So Mary, now you've got my attention because I'm a superstitious person as well as being a suspicious person. How long have you listened to me on WOR New York?
Maybe 8 years.
Oh my God, have you ever had any suspicions or intuitions about me in the shower?
I just know you're a good man. That's all.
No, come on, but you've not had any like thoughts, dark thoughts, light thoughts, medium thoughts?
You'd have to.
No, all right. Well, maybe tonight when you're taking a shower, you'll think of me and you'll come up with something. All right, Mary, you lighten things up a bit. I'm not laughing at you. You made me feel better to believe that somebody actually thinks in the shower. I don't know what I do in the shower. I have no recollection. I'm so busy avoiding not slipping and dying that I don't even I don't know what I'm doing in there. I think I'm thinking not to fall in the shower and not to get my dog wet, who's always sitting outside the shower. Mary, would you like a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny to show your other spiritualist friends?
Oh my God, would I? Yes,
oh, isn't that
I
sweet?
Would.
Well, I'm going to save you a trip to the bookstore or a trip to the internet to buy it online. Guys, send Mary a copy. It's all embargoed until next week. Look, folks, it is on the ABC News website, which I posted on Michael Savage. It's everywhere. It's not my story. Nuclear Security Summit. The president is talking Obama. This is my last election. After my election, I have more flexibility. Medvedev, I understand I will transmit this information to Vladimir. And Obama then looks up as he was caught in a lie, crosses his legs, touches his mouth. I mean, these are such giveaways to a trained, you know, if you're a trained, God, I don't know who I'm talking to sometime on the radio. I don't know who the audience consists of. When you have millions of listeners, it's a figure everybody from Deliverance characters who don't know anything to geniuses to ex-police to counterintelligence to the government officials themselves. Look at that videotape of Obama supplicating to Medvedev and tell me what you think. Tell me this is not prescient of me to have said trickle-down tyranny, treating enemies like friends and friends like enemies. Well, you could argue that Russia's not our enemy. You could say that as well. You could argue that Russia is our friend. You could argue that he's just trying to maintain good relations with a powerful friend and he doesn't want to antagonize them. And in order to do that, he'll do exactly what Chamberlain did and he will sell Czechoslovakia down the toilet. Because what's Czechoslovakia to world leaders? Nothing. In other words, if you're willing to invade a country and kill thousands of people in order to promote your agenda, as we have done across the Arab Crescent, what the heck is Czechoslovakia? Czechoslovakia was nothing to Chamberlain. He threw it to the wolves of the Nazi party. And Czechoslovakia and Poland, again, are the poor children of Europe once again. And Obama's ready to throw them to the wolves. This time it's not Germany, it's Russia. Now, why would Russia not want a nuclear defense shield around Eastern Europe? I don't know. Think about that one. Let's think about that for a minute. Let's look at the bigger picture. If Russia is our ally, and I pray that they are, but I don't know. How would I know what they have in their mind? I have no way. The world has changed so rapidly in my lifetime, it's hard to know who's what, right? So let's say they're putatively our adversary ally, both, you know what I mean, who are struggling for power, and they've been increasing their power while our power has been diminishing, theirs has been increasing. There's no question about it. The scales have shifted against us for many different reasons. And they're a resource-rich nation, and therefore they're a powerful nation. It's all about resources. It always has been. I came to that conclusion when I was 17 and looked around at the world stage, and I said, whoever has the resources wins. And I always felt good about America because I knew we had vast, vast natural resources, which we still do. We have enough natural gas. We have enough natural gas to fuel this nation for 200 years. We have enough potential energy in shale that with processes that have been developed only in the last 10 years, fracking, they can break out the energy inside that shale. We have oil in Canada that the Canadians wanted to ship to us in Louisiana that could have rid us of the yoke of Arab imperialism. And Obama has rejected virtually everything I've just mentioned. That is why we are on our knees. And the symbol of this man supplicating to Medvedev is more than symbolic. It is figurative. I'll be right back. Savage.
So we're saying to President Obama, you got to do your job on this one, buddy. We don't need a beer. We don't need to laugh and have a good time. Our children are dying. And so, white America, we have given you 400 years to get it right, and you still have failed black people. We're not even citizens in this country. We're still third-class citizens.
You would agree with that part of it. I mean, you agree with that? In the sense, doesn't that confirm something about Obama? I mean, this is crazy. All the demagogues are coming up like the proverbial mushroom in the rain now. You got Al Sharpton trying to cause a race riot. As I speak, flying down there to see if he can cause something to burn. And Jesse Jackson would not have been heard from for a long time. No doubt in my mind why. They gave him such fat contracts that he was not heard from for such a long time. Because let's face it, this is not good for Obama. This is not good for Obama's reelection. This tragedy of this young man, Trayvon Martin, this is not a good thing. The last thing Obama wants white people to think of is a racial divide. Because if the country fractures along racial lines, Obama loses. Don't ever forget that 67% of the country are descendants of European Americans. In other words, white, if you want to put it into a term that really has no application whatsoever. And so, therefore, it was the swing voter inside the blue-collar white that elected Obama. Make no mistake about it. And if they should remember for a moment that they are hated by a large, large class of people in this country. Very, very interesting and very important to talk about. But as I started the show today, I told you that Obama is a very lucky man. He has a lucky star flying over his his traverse on Earth. Very lucky. Very many things are happening in his life that show he's a very lucky man. There's no question about it. This is not one of those things. This is not very lucky to see racial divide appearing in the United States of America. Not at all. And so it's very hard to predict what is going to happen come November. Very, very, very hard to predict. Zimmerman says Traven decked him with one blow. Much of his account has been corroborated by witnesses, but you haven't heard that yet on ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, and Fox News, who have all electronically lynched Zimmerman. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What would you like to talk about in the waning moments of this hour? I'll tell you what I'd like to talk about. I'd like to talk about the most important and my last nonfiction book, Trickle Down Tyranny. It's due out next Tuesday. Advice to the next president, The Savage Worldview. I'll just read it to you and see what you think about it, because the opening line is one that will live, I think, for a long time. Advice to the next president, The Savage Worldview. Economies can be rebuilt, armies can be repopulated, but once a nation's pride is gone, it can almost never be restored. The loss of a nation's honor is something not even centuries can repair. The next president must love America. The next president must embody unequivocally everything that is good about this country going back to its founding. In other words, the next president must be the exact opposite of Barack Obama. He must be a man of high character and strong commitment to American values, because he will be facing problems and issues that no U.S. leader has had to face since the years leading up to World War II. And then I go from there and I don't stop for one paragraph, one sentence, one comma, one period, nothing. Nothing. I don't pause for over 300 pages. Not one pause. And I'm going to read you the last paragraph of the book, because if I scan a book in a bookstore, I read the first paragraph and the last paragraph. And then I start dipping inside and see if I want to buy it. What I've delivered in this book is the most important analysis you'll ever read of why we must stop the tyrant in the White House now before it's too late. If we allow Obama another 4 years, he will have destroyed our country. We're living under a crypto dictatorship right now. In Trickle Down Tyranny, I've shown you the scope of the Obama takeover, and I've shown you how we can crush it before it crushes us. You agree with any of that? Well, You can cast the vote before the election. You can cast the vote by buying the book and proudly walking around with the cover in your hand. You can take it to work and you can put it on a desk and see how liberal your coworkers are. See what country you really live in. Put a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny on your desk at work and see how tolerant your tolerant liberal friends are at work. Try it at a school board meeting. Try it on a subway. Try it on a bus. See how liberal and tolerant your liberal and tolerant friends are when they see the cover for Trickle Down Tyranny, proudly carried around by another proud American. I suggest you try it. I suggest you try it, but take two aspirins and call the good doctor the next day, because you may need them. Kevin in New York, welcome from WOR.
Michael, thanks for having me on the show. I think you'll be happy to know I don't think about you in the shower, but I haven't. I have been thinking a lot about this election, and I think the question you posed before is the one I want to address, and I want to make.
I have 28 seconds. Give me the 5-second version.
You gave me on the waterfront the fall man. I'm going to give you Obama's reason why he's going to be elected. You asked. Here's the reason, because he's an expert campaigner.
All right. You're getting a free copy of Trickle Down Tyranny, my new book out to be published, just to be published next week. Trickle Down Tyranny. He thinks he's going to win because he's an excellent campaigner. And I'm not so sure that that's going to bring him over the finish line.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Story of the day. Obama was caught on a microphone speaking to Medvedev of Russia. He thought the mic was off, but it was on. And Obama betrayed not himself, because we know who he is. He betrayed America and Europe. Speaking off the record with a closed mic, or so Obama thought, to outgoing Prime Minister Medvedev of Russia, he said, "Give me more space on the issue of missile defense." He said, "This will be my last election, and after he wins the election, he would have more flexibility." What? The first thing this means is that Obama is betraying both Europe and the U.S. What he means is that after he's reelected, he'll be free to pull the plug on the planned missile shield in Eastern Europe, stabbing in the back nations that were only recently under the yoke of the Soviet Union. And make no mistake about it, you liberal idiots. This is also a betrayal of the United States and all our strategic aims. For this is the same president who is making massive cutbacks to our own nuclear defenses and our military. Now, I got to tell you this. I pointed all of this out in Trickle-Down Tyranny. It's the most important book you will ever buy. I implore you to go to michaelsavage.com and order a copy now. But what is even more disturbing is that what Obama, in what he thought was a private moment, seems to take his reelection for granted. How can he do this at a time when his polls are lower than they've ever been, when gas prices are higher than they've ever been, when the Republicans are weaker than they've ever been? This statement from Obama that he's going to win makes it clearer to me than it's ever been. The Republicans are taking a dive. Why else would Rick Santorum, one of the least qualified presidential candidates in American history, still be allowed in the race at this point? Why would Newt Gingrich, who doesn't even have a remote chance of winning the nomination, continue to appear on the campaign trail? And why would Mitt Romney show such moderation in the defense of liberty? Maybe it's because the fix is in. The Republicans have betrayed themselves and betrayed conservatives. It's a repeat of John McCain, who took a dive in 08. Remember, Romney and McCain were neck and neck, and then suddenly they took up that old warhorse, McCain, and he took a dive. It seems to me Romney is preparing to take a dive in 2012. The puppeteers behind the scenes have decided that just as there were 8 years of Bush, there will be 8 years of Obama. The Republicans seem to know it. Obama seems to know it. But only Michael Savage has said it. I pray to God I am wrong. Andrea Mitchell, perhaps the worst and most distrustful voice in the history of the media, the wife of Alan Greenspan of the Federal Reserve, both people who I think should be indicted for what they've done to our economy, had the audacity to go to a new low level. She went to Havana today and kissed the behind of the murderous dictators Fidel and his brother Raul Castro.
Now, there have been real impacts of the embargo, and very little chance that that is going to change in an American election year. What economic reforms has Raul Castro tried to put in place in the last couple of years? We've seen private property, the ability to own your own land. How important is this as a development in Cuba?
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers' softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat, that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better. Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com. And it sounds like Rick Santorum got fed up with one of the midstream media reporters.
You said that Mitt Romney is the worst Republican in the country. Is that true?
What speech did you listen to?
Right here. It's right here. You said he's the worst
Stop
Republican.
Stop lying. I said he was the worst Republican to run on the issue of Obamacare. And that's what I was talking about. I have said uniquely For every speech I give, I said he is uniquely disqualified to run against Barack Obama on the issue of health care. Would you guys quit distorting what I'm saying?
Do you think he's the worst Republican to run,
run against Barack Obama on the issue of health care because he fashioned the blueprint? I've been saying it in every speech. Quit distorting my words. If I see it, it's... Come on, man. What are you doing?
When Obama said he'd be able to nix Europe's missile shield after the election, at least Mitt Romney had the sense to attack him. Only he wouldn't do it on the Savage Nation. He did it before one of the worst worms in history, Wolf Blitzer.
Russia is not a friendly character on the world stage, and for this president to be looking for greater flexibility where he doesn't have to answer to the American people in his relations with Russia is very, very troubling, very alarming. I'm very, very concerned. I think the American people are going to feel the same way. This is a president who is telling us one thing and doing something else and is planning on doing something even more frightening.
On MichaelSavage.com, there are many important stories, including the fact that Obama betraying America in front of a microphone which he thought was turned off. The Trayvon Martin case is a monster case for many reasons. Today, we hear the other side. He said that the teenager who was shot went for his gun. He tried to grab his gun. He was seen by a 13-year-old witness laying on the ground with a bloody nose and a bloody head. That is the guy who shot the gun. That does not stop the demagogue, vile, filthy, gutter rat, Al Sharpton, from going down to Florida today to try and set the world on fire, in my estimation. It's a shocking thing to see that this out-of-state agitator, but actually has a show on General Electric's outlet, MSNBC. Shame on you, General Electric. 1-800-449-8255. That's one of the biggest stories. The fact of the matter is this kid is dead, but you don't know the whole story. Why didn't all this information come out before everyone got involved, like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson? But you made up your mind, didn't you? Tawana Brawley, Duke lacrosse team. Count on Sharpton, the out-of-state agitator, to use race to get ahead. Also on MichaelSavage.com are the following stories. Let's go there together. If you want to hear me talking about the most important book I've ever written, Trickle Down Tyranny, which is coming April 3rd, you can click on a soundbar there on the top right. But I want to read you something. One of the punchlines that I'm using to alert you to the book is the line, "Our worst enemies are praised, but our allies stiffed." Am I a prophet? Today, Obama is seen on a closed mic begging Russia to wait for his election so he can sell out our allies. It's unbelievable. It's everything I told you in Trickle Down Tyranny. It's the one book you will need to stop this man from getting reelected. In Afghanistan, two British soldiers shot in the back by Afghan army gunmen. Two British soldiers, someone's sons and husbands, shot in the back by Afghan army gunmen. Here's a terrible story. This week, 2 million Arabs are going to march on Jerusalem. 2 million Arabs are going to come from surrounding nations and march on Jerusalem. They're going to try and liberate Jerusalem. They say it's peaceful. Let me tell you something. This is what we saw coming on the Savage Nation for months now, instigated by the West. How about your old friend Harry Reid? A firm tied to Harry Reid eyes a $4.9 billion federal loan for a Vegas train. You hear this? A train to Las Vegas for $5 billion. Obama to give islands and billions of barrels of oil to Russia. ACLU and commie judge okays cutting up and spitting on the U.S. flag. Your friend Obama wants to disarm pilots. Hey, liberal morons, the next time you fly in a plane, would you rather have your pilot armed or disarmed? Why would you want a pilot disarmed? Idiots! MichaelSavage.com has the following stories on the bottom. Let's go to the bottom. Deadly racetracks, mangled horses, maimed jockeys. Those are the new economics of horse racing. The corporate control. Pakistan minister claims 100 women forced to convert to Islam. You hear this? The religion of peace? Well, I can go on. It's up to you to go on to michaelsavage.com and see what's going on. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Listen, talk radio is primarily political. Let's start with that. However, I try to give you more than politics. I try to give you a versatile show, and many of you say, oh, Mike, we know where you stand politically. Tell us more stories about Teddy. Tell us. How much can I tell you about Teddy? So I'll tell you about Teddy. No, I don't have anything to tell you about Teddy. I'll tell you another story, just for the heck of it, since I need a breather myself. My head's spinning. Why? You know how obsessed I am with food, right? I am like a starvation case compared to this individual who puts me to shame in terms of the obsession with food. We have been eating for 3 days straight. This is astounding. No one can believe the amounts of food that were ordered. I'm sick from it. I need to have my stomach pumped from the lift. I'm going to basically spend in bed trying to purge the food we've been eating. I've never seen anything like this. You say, well, okay, what's so funny about that? Nothing. There's nothing funny about it. That's just the point. So what is this all about? The answer is, this is family. You get together over a meal. You break rice together. You argue for 3 days straight. What could be better? What could be better than to argue over the drop of a grain of rice? Nothing could be better than that. That's family life. You see, if you think that family life consists of life with father and everyone gets together and it's you hold hands and you pray to the Lord and, yes, Father, I love you, and, yes, Mother, may I help you, and, yes, Son, you're wonderful, and, yes, Daughter, you're great. Well, you don't know what real life 101 is, because family life is strife life. Family life is strife life, and the faster you know that life is strife to begin with, the less trouble you're going to have with life. That's life 101. Anyone who tells you that you're supposed to have a smooth ride, life is not a bed of roses. Anyone who promises you that is sending you down the road of disappointment, frustration, and medication. The day you learn that life is strife, life is disagreement, life is arguing with people and coming to a conclusion without violence, then you're on the road to understanding what life really is. Life is struggle. That's all. It's as simple as that. So if this sounds like something you already heard, I can't help it. Sometimes the simplest things are the truest things. You understand that? Now let's get back to regular programming. How come you've tuned out of politics? How come you have tuned out of politics? Lou on WOR, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm tuning out of politics because we are all being inundated by so much garbage from this administration on a daily basis that as a human being, you can only absorb so much of this crap. So I'm taking a step back, waiting for the election, and hopefully we're going to run this guy out on a rail in November.
So wait, so you're confirming what I suspect, which is you don't even want to hear what Obama does next because you wouldn't be shocked by it.
Not at all. I wouldn't be shocked by anything.
Okay, so you're saying I understand he's bad. I understand he's a devious guy who's out for as much power as he can get. They're corrupt. They're robbing the Treasury blind. What can I do about it? I have one chance. That's November. Until then, I don't even want to hear about it anymore. Is that basically what you're saying?
That's basically it, Michael. And as far as I can see, what this guy gets away with, he makes Al Capone blush in his grave. Not turn over and do circles. He makes him blush.
I've never seen anything like this. And I've also never seen such a media cover-up like this. Oh. Never. Never. It's astounding. It's astounding.
These journalists, they're an embarrassment, an absolute embarrassment. They're cheerleaders.
Yeah, no. The journalism schools were taken over 20 years ago by three different men. I knew all three of them. I didn't know them personally. These were all hardcore radicals on the order of Reverend Wright. They run the journalism schools in this country, and they handpick the stooges that are allowed to go through them and graduate so they can control them like puppets. So that's why we have a compliant press. But, Lou, having said what you said, that there's too much corruption, you don't want to hear any more about Obama scandals, you know what he is. You know that he's basically trashed the White House and America. You know that he stabs us in the back at every turn. You know he laughs at us behind our back. You know all of this. What then would you tune into talk radio to hear till November?
Michael, you make my wife and I laugh. And you also, you know, you fill the airwaves with wisdom, whether it's quoting from the Bible, whether it's quoting from your personal life, whether it's the Italian guys that helped rescue you on the boat that time from the guy that was going to try to do something. It's one thing after the other, whether it's the other guy.
Oh, you remember that one little story when a guy got nasty and some Italian kid came over and threatened to beat him up for me?
Well, there were three guys. I think you said they were all from Brooklyn, and they approached.
Yeah, they were. I've never saw that guy again. I mean, we called each other, we emailed each other a few times. I never saw him again. He was a great guy. He said, he didn't even know me. I remember he came over. He said, "Hey, Mike, is this guy bothering you?" You should have seen the three of them run back into their sailboat, the smarty little liberals with their headbands.
Right. And I'll tell you, Michael, those are the guys. The wise man once said, "The world we grew up in is no longer here." That wise man is you. And those guys from Brooklyn and my uncles that are no longer here, the colorful characters that I grew up with are no longer here. That's why I tune into you. You're my colorful uncle that I grew up with, Michael.
Well, Lou, I got to tell you, unfortunately, you make me a little nervous and sad when you say that. I know that's true. In many ways, I'm one of the last people standing from that generation, certainly in the media. You know, the time has gone by very fast, Lou. To me, I don't want to get maudlin right now, but 1994 is when I began in radio. I was already a man with three previous successful careers. I went into radio late in life. I never thought I would last this long, nor did I ever expect I'd still be here standing on Earth to begin with. And here I am standing strong as from the day I started, and I haven't really changed my politics. But when I see the media landscape and I realize that most of the other fellows, even on the conservative side, are like 20 years my junior, I realize that I'm in a very special position. You understand that, don't you?
I don't know what your listeners would do without you, Michael, to be honest. I mean, it's you're a breath of fresh air, your insight into things, your intellect, and I'm not just trying to butter you up. But
No, it's because I'm an older person who's lived a very full life so far. Unless you have a wife and children and a family and you have that, you really shouldn't even be in talk radio, to be frank with you. And I'm not knocking anyone in particular. Unless you have had children, you have no right talking about family values. Am I right or wrong about that?
Right about that, Michael. And by the way, we love your stories on Teddy, of course. We have three dogs of our own, and we love them.
Oh, this is great. Okay, my friend Lou, if you name it, you gain it. What's the book?
Trickle Down Poverty.
Okay, you get it anyway. It's very hard. The winner was Trickle Up Poverty. Now this is Trickle Down Tyranny, and I want everyone who bought the poverty book to buy the tyranny book. Already the media has gone past the killing of the children at the Jewish school in France and how right I was about it being a Muslim extremist while they try to make it into a Nazi or a serial killer. Joining us right now to talk about this madness and much more is the terrorism and national security expert for CBN News, Eric Stackelback. Eric Stackelback, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
So tell us what you think about these killings of Jewish children in France and why the media covered it up.
You know, Michael, this fits a pattern, this French shooting. And that pattern is Jews around the world, in France and elsewhere, are in the crosshairs firmly of radical Islamists. Really, the broader scope of this attack, before he attacked those Jewish children, slaughtered Jewish children, slaughtered a rabbi, before that, Michael, this Muslim jihadi also killed French paratroopers. Now, Michael, I've investigated homegrown jihad and jihad in the West, in Europe, in America, from coast to coast for the past 11 years. I wrote a whole book about it, The Terrorist Next Door. And in every case, Michael, of homegrown jihad, in nearly every case, in America, in Europe, what do we have? All of the jihadists I investigate have two main targets, Jews and the military. They see Jews as, you know, it says it, look, in Islam's core text, the Quran, the Hadiths, Jews are the sons of apes and pigs. They're monkeys. So this is ingrained in them theologically, but then also with the military. They see the U.S. military, French military, British military. They see the militaries of the West as really the face of the Western imperialist crusaders. So in every case, you're going to have the military, you're going to have the Jews targeted. I've seen this time and time again. And really, Michael, with this French attack, I think a few things stand out to me. Number one, it kind of echoes the John Allen Muhammad shootings back in 2002, the Beltway sniper here in D.C., where I'm sitting right now, where you had two guys basically shut down the entire D.C. metro area, two guys with assault rifles. That's what we had in the past week or so in France with this shooter. And to me, it shows the shift in tactics by jihadis. And Michael, you and I have talked about this many times. Yes, they still want to top 9/11. Without a doubt, they're working at it every day. But in the meantime, these smaller scale, cheap, low-tech attacks are the new face of Islamic terror, especially in the West. Think Fort Hood, think the underwear bomber, think the Times Square bomber, think this French shooter. This is the new face of jihad in the West.
Well, it's pretty clear that this was not a lone wolf attack. Don't you agree this guy was working for Al-Qaeda?
Well, it remains to be seen, Michael, whether he had direct links to Al-Qaeda and whether he was directed by Al-Qaeda's hierarchy. We know that he trained in the tribal regions of Pakistan in Waziristan, which is an Al-Qaeda-Taliban hotbed, of course. So I'm sure when he was there, he met and networked with Al-Qaeda, with the Taliban. That seems beyond question. Now, once he returned to France, did he maintain those connections? That is the big question, Michael. With the internet now, you can reach out and touch a jihadist half a world away. I'm sure, I'd be shocked, Michael, if when he returned to France, he just transitioned into a peaceful 9-to-5 life at a gas station. No, no, no. I'm sure that he maintained contacts back in Pakistan, back in those tribal regions. I'd be shocked if he didn't. But in many cases, these self-styled young jihadists in the West, sometimes they don't have connections in, say, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia. Sometimes they haven't trained overseas, and sometimes, Michael, they are self-starters, and they're being radicalized on the internet. The web is such a fertile ground for terrorist, radical Islamic jihadi radicalization. We're seeing time and time again cases of this, including here in the U.S., where people are radicalized on their own. What's the darkest thing you can find? If you're a disaffected, angry, lonely, troubled person, what's the darkest thing you can find? It's that world of radical Islam. You know, in the 70s, 80s, you might have seen some of these people at Jonestown. They might have joined a cult. But now the darkest, most forbidden, most evil thing you can find is this world of jihad, and it's all at your fingertips on the web.
Well, in your opinion, what's the chance of something like what happened in France happening in the United States?
Well, I think this is the new blueprint, Michael, as I said, and I would be shocked if this didn't happen. Look, there is a precedent in the U.S. Number one, the Fort Hood shooting, where we had an Islamic radical terrorist gunman gunned down 13 American troops. So we do have that precedent here. And as I said, this kind of echoes the Beltway sniper to me in that these were three separate hit-and-run attacks in the same metro area that left people paranoid. There was some psychological terror here. Look, he killed three French paratroopers in two separate incidents. Then he opens up fire outside of a Jewish school. This is not difficult, Michael, and that is the scary thing about it. It's not really hard to pull off these kinds of soft target attacks in shopping malls, on buses, at schools. I'm shocked, frankly, that since 9/11, we haven't seen more of that here in the United States. I'm relieved, thank God, that we haven't, but the potential is absolutely there. Look, when you get on a train here in Washington, D.C., where I'm sitting right now, you get on the metro, you get on a bus, they're not frisking you. They're not checking your bags. It's a different atmosphere. This is not Israel, where they have security guards everywhere you look, at shopping malls, on buses. The U.S. is a very different atmosphere, and if it's going to be in our faces, the Israelis deal with this on a constant basis. If it's going to be in our faces on a daily basis, if that comes to the U.S., I don't know right now that we are ready psychologically to deal with that, with a gunman opening fire, yelling Allahu Akbar, opening fire at elementary schools. I don't know right now that we're ready to deal with it, but we better prepare ourselves, Michael, because I believe that these kind of attacks could very well come to the U.S.
Switching topics to the Iran-Israel crisis, tell my audience about Iran supposedly monitoring New York City landmarks.
Well, look, Michael, to anyone who has monitored this Iranian threat over the past few years, this should come as no surprise. We, America, are the great Satan and ultimate prize. Israel is just a bump in the road for the Iranians. We are their ultimate target. So now we have the NYPD's director of intelligence testifying on Capitol Hill this week that Iran, the NYPD, has in the past 7 years alone, there's been some 13 incidents where individuals connected to the Iranian government were caught by the NYPD taking pictures and surveilling New York City landmarks, places like the Brooklyn Bridge, Empire State Building, train tracks. Now, why would they do this? It's not a coincidence. And this NYPD intelligence chief said, look, we believe that this was pre-operational, that the Iranians, you know, were in the planning stages here, monitoring landmarks in case something breaks out between the U.S. and Iran or Iran and Israel, which, Michael, as you know, I believe is very likely this year. If and when that does break out, will Iran have assets in place via Iran, but also their proxy, Hezbollah? Will they have assets in place here in America, in New York City, of course, which is the holy grail for jihadists still? They want to hit New York so badly. Will they have assets in place? And according to the director of the NYPD's Intelligence Analysis Division, yes, Iran has been surveilling sites here in the U.S. We know that there are Hezbollah operatives here. We know there are Iranian operatives here. And the nightmare scenario is if hostilities break out in the Middle East, and make no mistake, they are coming. When, I should say, hostilities break out in the Middle East with Iran, does Iran attack here on U.S. soil? We have the precedent, Michael, just a few months ago. We had that plot here in Washington, D.C. The Iranians were plotting to assassinate the Saudi ambassador and the Israeli ambassador in Washington, D.C. Now, talk about bold. They are not scared of us, especially with this administration, and they're ready to strike. And U.S. intelligence officials are saying more and more, look, Iran is becoming increasingly bold. And it had to make me laugh a few weeks ago, Michael, when we had our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff on Meet the Press says, quote, we believe, does the Obama administration, that the Iranians are rational actors. You have to do a double take. There's nothing rational about this regime. They are an apocalyptic regime that thinks they can usher in the return of the Islamic Messiah if they blow up a bunch of Jews and destroy America.
If Israel decides to strike Iran, do you think they could be successful without the help of the U.S.?
You know, Michael, Israeli government officials, I should say, are increasingly confident that they can have a successful strike against Iran's nuclear facilities. I've talked to Israeli officials on and off the record for the past 7-8 years about this, and every time I talk to them, I'm struck by their confidence. There seems to be a real confidence among the Israelis that, yes, we can do this, but, Michael, even more importantly, there seems to be a confidence that, yes, not only can we do this, but we can minimize the damage afterwards, minimize the blowback. Now, we saw some encouraging signs last week. There were some 200 rockets fired out of Gaza into southern Israel, and Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system knocked down some 90% of those rockets. Now, that is very encouraging. I interviewed Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Michael Oren, last week about it, and he said, look, it was great. It was encouraging. Israel has about three of these Iron Dome anti-missile batteries stationed throughout southern Israel. They need more. They need them in the north, on the border, Israel's northern border in southern Lebanon. We have Hezbollah aiming some 50,000 rockets at Israel right now. So Iron Dome was successful. Will it be successful against a massive missile and rocket barrage that may very well follow an Israeli strike against Iran's nuclear facilities? That's a much tougher question to answer, because you have missiles coming from every direction into Israel, from Iran, from Gaza, from Lebanon, possibly from Syria if Assad hangs on. So that's a lot tougher to answer, but the Israelis feel like they can withstand the blowback. Now, you make a great point. Does America get involved? I believe there is a good chance that the U.S. gets involved against its will. Believe me, the Obama administration, this president, wants no parts of Iran, does not want to get involved in any kind of conflict between Iran and Israel. He would love to sit on the sidelines. But as we're talking about, Michael, does Iran let him sit on the sidelines? Look, when they look at Israel, the U.S., we are inseparable in their eyes. We are one in the same in the eyes of this Iranian regime, and they may very well react by carrying out a terror attack on U.S. soil, by shutting the Strait of Hormuz, by attacking U.S. troops in Afghanistan, making our lives difficult. There is a chance of that. But the thing is, this is not a rational regime, contrary to what our administration believes. And because they're not rational, you don't know what they'll do, how far they'll go. Common sense would say, look, they don't want to get into an all-out conflict with the U.S. because the regime would be squashed and they'd be eliminated. But you never know with this regime. And I can't stress enough, Michael, that apocalyptic ideology that drives this Iranian regime, that says that the Islamic Messiah, the Mahdi, as they call him, is soon going to return to Earth to lead the armies of Islam to victory over Israel and the West and wipe out the Christians and the Jews. They truly believe this stuff. And any regime with an ideology like that, you can't predict what they'll do.
Well, how important is it that the U.S. really stand by Israel?
Israel is our most important ally in the world, and I think that's become more and more clear since 9/11. Israel is the canary in the coal mine in this fight we're up against right now. Israel is the first line of defense for Western civilization. If Israel goes down, we all go down. It's pretty clear. People who want to be complete isolationists and say, hey, leave Israel to their own devices, they can handle themselves, they're sadly mistaken, Michael, because when the jihadists are done with Israel, they're coming for us next. They're not going to stop at Israel. History says otherwise. History says that before Israel was, in my opinion, miraculously reestablished in 1948, before the United States of America was even founded, hundreds and hundreds of years before those two occurrences, wave after wave of Islamic jihad was raging against the West. Jihadists conquered everywhere from Spain to Sicily to Greece, drove into France, drove to the gates of Vienna twice. That was before America and Israel even existed. So what makes people think today that if we just leave Israel alone and withdraw and leave Israel to her own devices, what makes people think today that the jihadists will just stop at Israel? As I said, history says otherwise. It would be the worst mistake we ever made to abandon this lone bastion of democracy in a sea of jihadist tyranny in the Middle East. Our only friend, our only true friend in that region that shares our democratic values, shares Judeo-Christian Western values and civilization. It's a nightmare what this administration is doing to Israel right now. Very bad thing. And that's why I think, Michael, that Israel has to act before the November election. If Obama gets reelected, he will make life intolerable for Israel and make it 1,000 times harder for them to act against Iran's nuclear weapons program and avert a second Holocaust.
Eric Stackelbeck, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, great talking to you. Thanks for having me. You can check out my book, The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat, where I talk about all these issues, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. Also, check out my show, Stackelbeck on Terror. You can find it at CBNNews.com. Thanks again.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
I'm going to tell you, it's this simple. If I believed that God was omnipotent and caused all events on earth, I don't know whether I would live another second, because then I would think God is the most evil force on the planet. I don't believe God is omnipotent. I don't believe God controls the movement of every leaf and every sneeze. I believe God is omnipresent. God is everywhere, but God doesn't control every event on earth. I believe that there are cases where you might say there's divine intervention in a person's life, but even that's a stretch. I frankly think that it's all chance at a certain point. He made the ball of wax, called the earth and man and the animals, and to him it's the blink of an eye what's been going on. I don't think he's very happy with the results, but I don't think he controls every bowel movement that you take and every bowel movement that you don't take and every earthquake and every child that dies. And anyone who does... I got another guest coming for you. You're in very, very deep water. Well, what more is there to be said? The wood of a tree is made of fibers and resin, and it gives a tree its ability to bend in the wind without snapping. And, of course, the same concept, the same principles are used to make the frames of many cars on the high end of the cars today, the composite, the carbon composite cars today. Carbon fiber, it's very interesting. I actually have a car with carbon fiber in it. I have a few cars and other things, which I've earned, by the way. I didn't take it from you. I earned it. I pay my taxes. I work hard. I'm not allowed to own a car with carbon fiber in it. I'm not allowed to own a boat if I pay taxes on the fuel and on the boat. You should tell me what I can own. That's how it works in a fascist dictatorship. Will you, the unwashed, illiterate, jealous masses, control the society? And what happens is, eventually, the society comes to a grinding halt. Just take a look at the ex-Soviet Union, look at communist China before it modified its economic system. Take a look at any other system that was heavily controlled by the government, and you'll see what will happen if you let the rotting vegetables have their day in the sun. Here's where Geisel actually was a Stalinist. Dr. Seuss, whose real name was Theodore Geisel. You don't know that about Dr. Seuss. You think he just wrote children's books. He was a brainwasher. He was a cartoonist. And his cartoons were, of course, playing down the threat of communism. And he said the greater threat was in the Dies Committee and those who threatened to cut America's, quote, lifeline to Stalin and Soviet Russia, who Dr. Seuss said were the ones carrying our warload. So the next time you buy a book for your child and you think you're buying something simple and innocent, understand that Geisel's cartoons were fundamentally communist in orientation. Doesn't mean he was a bad fellow. I'm sure he was a very talented, creative man. But he was a